This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded June 2nd, 2009. Tonight we're talking about some new search things that have happened upon the inner tubes and maybe some other stuff too. So to start with, Bing is the new live search. Does it matter? Does anyone care? Have you tried it? Have you? What's the past tense of Bing? Have you binged?
Have you bunged?
I banged.
I have not bonged. I have binged and bunged and banged, though. So who is in charge of coming up with names for these things?
Yeah, I don't know.
And
it seems odd.
And why?
I mean, I guess Google would have sounded weird. Did sound kind of silly to us a lot. I mean, I know it comes from a number, and I know it has mathematical significance and all that. But I mean, that was kind of a silly name too. And Twitter is a silly name. I mean, maybe it's just that we're not
Yahoo.
Yahoo. But I agree. I think Microsoft has just a stellar record for coming up with, like, exceptionally, like, when they come up with a nonsense word, it's just really silly.
Zune,
yeah. Which wasn't that like a curse word in Hebrew? I believe it is. I mean, I guess it's hard to find any short pronounceable word that's not a curse word somewhere.
But it does work in a sentence.
Yeah, go bing it, I guess.
Right. Instead of go live it or go live it.
Yeah.
Which
what's your bing rank? Is that bingability? Is he bingable? Is she bingable?
Oh.
Are we bingable?
I guess there's Bing Crosby. I don't know if that had something behind that. So if you go to discoverbing.com, they have some kind of things where they show off. And, you know, I guess it's, you know, they have travel, shopping, health, local, and then more. And in general, like, I tried some of these, you know, versus Google. And for a lot of things, like, for instance, travel, traffic, that sort of stuff, it was at least equal to, you know, for those kind of specialty searches. I actually did get some good stuff out of it. Bing is using PowerSet, which I guess is kind of like a natural language search designed to pull meaning out of stuff. Like most of my favorite Microsoft products, it was acquired from someone else. And then they're also using Faircast for travel, which is a pretty cool site that they acquired. And it like does travel search stuff, but it also will say travel prices are going up or down in case you're trying to plan ticket purchases. Any thoughts?
I've been trying it out this week, and I kind of like it. I've been getting good results from it. And definitely some of the things it does with images and shopping and travel are pretty interesting and pull things together that I used to get at different sites for.
So has anyone tried doing the same query, the same search in Bing and then in Google, just to see, you know, how much more relevant the results are? Because I found that the result sets are usually very different for things that I'm looking for. And I found that I still need to Google MSDN.com versus binging it, I guess.
There was a site I came up earlier this week. I don't remember where it was, but it gave you a side-by-side comparison of Bing versus Google when you type in a search phrase. And for a lot of things I tried, it was pretty close. I mean, it was close enough. But I didn't try it in anger.
Like the first thing I did was, of course, being the egotistical blogger type, is I typed my name in. And that actually is a pretty valid search for people to do, because as more and more of us get laid off, you know, we go to new jobs, there's a chance that the new job will Google you to see what you're about, see if they can find out something about you online. And I found that the Google results were, of course, much more relevant than the Bing results. The Bing results were really bizarre. It pulled up like three different times in the first page. It pulled up a blog post I had made like 4 years ago about a temporary tattoo at Archie McPhee's. I don't know how that was relevant. I guess it came up because it had been linked by some splogs. Some splogs were pointing to it. But it was still kind of bizarre that it didn't filter those out, I thought. Whereas the first page of results on Google is like, okay, my blog's at the top, you know, then LinkedIn, then Twitter, then, you know, some other, you know, sites that I know that I'm listed on, and some other blog posts. I don't know. I hope no one bings me if I'm looking for a new job.
I've been looking at blackdog.ie/google-bing, so which just sounds funny if you say it fast. But we could put that in the show notes. I'm sure there's other places too. It's a Google versus Bing comparison, and I've been just bringing some things up. I do notice it seems like Bing results, sometimes the first result will be odd, and then after that, generally pretty good. So I'm not sure exactly what is going on there. For something like if I put in traffic in my zip code, I get a better result from Bing. You know, Google says, well, you might want to go here to look up traffic, whereas, you know, I see it in line for Bing. So here's another question. Does it matter? Like, you know, so even if Bing was better, is it going to get people off? I mean, people aren't going to necessarily move off of Google, but maybe it's enough that people installing a new version of Windows aren't going to go switch their home page to Google. I mean, do you think that it's too late? Are they 10 years, you know, past the due date for a search engine?
Yeah, personally, I think, you know, whether it's as good as Google or 10% better than Google or 20% better than Google is totally irrelevant. I think it would have to be something like 200% better than Google in order for it to gain any sort of market share. I mean, it's not enough to be just a little bit better. You know, Google owns the search market, and it's going to take a hell of a lot more than, you know, a small marginal improvement to take that away from them.
Anyone else?
I think it's going to be an uphill climb. Although they say there's $100 million in marketing and advertisements coming out for Bing.
Speaking of money in Bing, one thing that Bing has is this cash back system. So the idea, and they've had this with Live for a little while, but the idea is if you go through the shopping area in Bing and you buy something, you may get, you know, 5% back or something for using Bing. Do you think that's enough to actually get it, you know, would people care?
Well, I mean, they've had that for a while at Live Search, and it certainly doesn't affect how I, you know, what I use.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you know, the vast majority of my searches do not end in a purchase. So, you know, I'm gonna target my behavior to, you know, the 90% case. I'm sure there are some people who will make the effort to try to get that cash back if they possibly can, but that's just, to me, is a very marginal, you know, advantage.
Yeah. You know, back to saying about the percentage better you'd have to be, one thing that in favor of that is I think that the image results in Live have been better for a while. Like the way that it displays them, the ways it allows you to filter on size and other information. And I think also which one was it? There are some things about Live Maps, or now Bing Maps, I guess, that are in some ways better than Google Maps. And it, you know, again, it kind of doesn't matter. People are just, unless people are just going to leave whatever the default search is, I think it's really hard to change people at this point.
Well, and there's something else here that Google has that I don't think that any other search engine is going to get, and that the name of their product is a verb. You know, even if they're using Bing or Yahoo, there's a big percentage of the population that still, you know, say, go Google that, regardless of what search engine they're doing, they're using at that point. You know, it's just like, do you ask for a tissue when you have a runny nose, or do you ask for a Kleenex? It's the same kind of deal. I just don't know how anyone's going to be able to overcome that. You know, you've never Yahooed something. You never AltaVista'd something. I never asked Jeeves anything. That's part of the uphill battle, but they're just, I don't know. I really don't know what Microsoft is doing online in terms of web properties. I don't get it. They've kind of been flailing around. They put these things up. They rebrand them. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're not. You know, so if you go to, what is it, maps.live.com, now you go to maps.bing.com. So what does it have to do with the, you know, is it now Microsoft Bing Messenger or is it Live Messenger? If I'm going to do app development, do I download the Bing framework or the Live framework? And how does that all fit together? Is there a Bing marketplace or what was their Google Base alternative called? Or it's kind of a cross between Google Base and Craigslist, wasn't it? Was it a marketplace? Something like that. And I'm just not seeing any kind of, you know, kind of cohesive strategy. You know, Google has kind of got it set, so they do things online. There's always something online, so it's documents, it's a RSS reader, it's, you know, the Google Talk is, you know, web kind of based. You can do it in your email client. You know, even Wave is going to be online. It's going to be in a browser. I don't know, there's just so much weirdness around Microsoft stuff that it's like they never give anything a chance. Start.com went up as a portal page, then boom, no, it's the Live homepage. No, wait, no, we've got Vista gadgets on the sidebar, and we've got online gadgets. And sometimes they cross over, but not really. And it's just, I don't know, I don't know what they're doing. I don't think they're going to succeed because they just haven't shown any kind of thoughtfulness surrounding the online arena.
Well, I think it's hard to say like what succeeding is. Do you have to be Kleenex to make money at selling tissues, you know? And you know, maybe there is enough of that. Well, it's a big enough market that they you know, capturing a bigger percentage is worth something.
Well, they still haven't been able to do much through their online ad selling.
Yeah.
I don't think, compared to, you know, AdWords or self, you know, selling your own space on your site. And that's the only thing that Google seems to be able to monetize. They, you know, they get something new, they slap Google Ads in it, and, you know, and hope that brings enough to justify its presence. But, you know, I don't think anyone is buying Microsoft Ads. I tried looking a while back at both Yahoo and you know, Microsoft Ads to see if there was any competitors to AdSense, and I didn't really see anything, and no one at the sites where, you know, had a sign up, send your email for info, and I'd send an email, and no one seemed interested in getting back to me. But then again, I'm kind of a small, tiny, infinitesimal dot on the, you know, side of a proton on the web, so...
Okay, so we've talked enough about how unlikely it is to capture the market from Google. There are some kind of neat, just if you step back and look at it from a usability perspective, there are some kind of neat things, I think. Like, for instance, in a search result, if I mouse over a search result, there's kind of a little Ajax-y thing over on the right side that shows, you know, if I mouse over it, then I get a little more information on it, which could be kind of quick for going through and without having to click, click, click on each link to see if it's what I want. I thought that was nice. Are there any other usability things that you guys saw that you thought were interesting?
Yeah, I think there's some nice little touches. And, you know, the image search. Live may have had this also, I don't remember. But, you know, you can kind of hover over an image and it'll kind of expand out the image and show you a little more detail. Or on the video search, you can just mouse hover over a video and it'll start playing a little, you know, snippet of the video, which is I thought is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
Is that me?
No, that was me playing some Young Jeezy just by mousing over a video.
Oh.
Okay, so obviously there's a downside to that feature.
Well, you know, I mean, those are some pretty nice things. Like, if you're searching through video, it's kind of ridiculous that you have to click and click and click. I mean, I think that there are some nice usability things, too, being able to see things in place versus having... I mean, that seems like... like, as I look at Windows 7, you kind of get the idea that they kind of sat down at Vista with a notebook and clicked through, and every time they said, "Ah, this sucks," they wrote it down and they fixed it. You know what I mean? And I get the feeling that that same sort of approach may have been taken with Bing, where it's like you search on something, you say, "What would I like to see here?" Something we've seen Google doing for a long time, but maybe taken a little further.
You know what I thought was interesting from a usability standpoint is that if you have been doing a few searches on Bing, then it maintains a search history. So you can go and do a see all on your search history. And then you can take your search history and you can export it to a SkyDrive or save it. And you do that by clicking on there's a sharing link somewhere in there. Doesn't come up for me in Chrome, I guess. And that might be because it uses Silverlight. But what I thought was interesting about the use of Silverlight was it wasn't one of these Silverlight applications that goes off and does crazy things and has to spin all sorts of animations and fancy graphics and so forth. It was just a very simply integrated Silverlight application that you almost weren't aware that it was there. Certainly, it would have jumped out at me if I, you know, wasn't kind of taking a close look at things on Bing. It just sort of comes up in this sharing feature and provides a little user interface that blends right into the page. And I thought that was kind of neat because that's what I've always pictured Silverlight being in that role. It's just that not many people have used it that way.
In a way, it's being used kind of as Gears kind of is elsewhere, but not inside. Like Google Gears has this, like if you use Google Gears and Gmail together, you get offline email in the browser, which is killer, because you can, you know, you can do everything online. You lose internet or jump on a plane and you can answer emails, and as soon as you get connection back, your emails go out, but without having to run a, you know, big old client that like Outlook or whatever that, you know, I mean, it's still, you get the advantages of the browser. And I agree. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great use of Silverlight in order to do that, enable offline storage and that kind of thing.
One interesting thing is that they don't actually use Silverlight for the video stuff. They use Flash, which is,
you know, it's funny. I just tried it tonight, and I think they switched over to Silverlight now.
Oh, did they? This is when, yeah, I tried it earlier. That's funny.
Right. If you go to discoverbing.com and you go to the product tour, for me it comes up, or not the product tour. Yeah, if you click on Decision Engine, which takes you to decisionengine.com, now it's playing in Silverlight. Yeah, the funny thing was Scott K posted about that after the Ballmer announcement that Bing was using Flash. And if you actually went in and looked at the page, I looked at the page source and I saw it including Silverlight.js, which I thought was strange. And so after tracking things around a little bit, I discovered that inside of Silverlight.js, someone had changed the create Silverlight method to, instead of creating the Silverlight object tag, which is what it usually does, it was actually dynamically injecting a different script that was loading the Flash player. So it's almost like they had all the Silverlight pieces there to use on Bing, but maybe at the last minute someone said, let's roll this out in Flash instead.
I see, when I right-click on stuff, I see Flash in the videos page, mm-hmm, like video results. I bet what they're going to do, I bet the idea behind this is to, if Silverlight's installed, use it, otherwise fall back to Flash. Because I think that they're in a tricky spot, and I think it would be really stupid to use Silverlight, you know, and then people go to it and say, well, this is dumb, it doesn't even work, or I'm not going to install Silverlight, and like, I don't think there's an advantage to doing that. I think this is a better place to say, if we've got it, use it, otherwise fall back to Flash.
Yeah, I actually saw that on Twitter a couple days ago. A couple people were complaining when they hit the Bing homepage, they were being prompted to install Silverlight, and they found that annoying.
I think they're screwed either way, really, with this, and they just, the best thing is to make it so that nobody notices, and the only way to do that is to support Silverlight and Flash, because if they support Flash, then people are gonna, you know, say, well, don't you like Silverlight? And if they have Silverlight, people aren't gonna use it in the right amount of numbers. So it's just an awkward spot. Nobody's gonna be happy. Kevin?
I was just going to say, just as I'm, you know, I'm looking at this stuff as you guys are talking, and I'm realizing that this whole autoplay the video while you mouse over is actually incredibly irritating. I thought it was cool at first, but like I'm just mousing over and I'm like getting these random sounds, and you know, I really hope they have a way to turn that off. Not quite as cool as I originally thought in reality.
I think they do, because on something else, where was it? When I in a search dropdown, like I started typing something and there's a preferences section, and I think that there's somewhere in there where you can, if not, they should add it. Actually, I don't see something there for video. But yeah, if they don't have that yet, I think that is a good idea to make that a turn offable. Are we done with Bing? I mean, not completely forever, but just for tonight.
Bing will always be with us. Until the next reorg.
I just want to make one comment, which is essentially to agree with Scott K, which is that, you know, this whole Bing thing just highlights to me basically what Scott was saying, which is that Microsoft I just don't know what the hell they're doing in this space. Like, they just don't have a story, and they just, you know, they're trying to do Me Too stuff. And there was an interesting article by Henry Blodgett, where he's got this chart of, you know, Microsoft's online income for the last 10 years. I mean, they're losing billions of dollars, you know, probably $10 billion over the last 10 years, you know, and for what? I mean, it's really crazy. They just don't know what to do in this space. And Bing is just like looks to me like another little, let's just try something else and maybe it'll work, but probably not. They need to reevaluate their whole strategy, I think, in this space. I don't use a single Microsoft online property, and I'm a Microsoft developer, you know? So not good for them.
I was just thinking, the only reason I have a Hotmail address and have had a Hotmail address is simply because I can't log on to Microsoft sites, you know, some of them, unless I have it. So MSDN subscription, or Microsoft Connect, things like that. And you know, I think it's kind of, even when you try to log in, you see, you know, different views of the login page depending on where you're going. Like, sometimes they have that cool live page where it remembers you, and you click on your email address and some JavaScript happens and this little password box appears and you type in your password. Other times it's the old school Hotmail where they have the standard kind of web form there, and you enter in your email address and password, or it's already entered in and you click submit. And you know, they can't even unite around their freaking online, you know, ID sign in. And that, you know, it's just sad that, you know, we accuse them of, or I don't know if we do, but lots of people accuse them of being a monopoly, but, you know, they really can't get their act together in lots of ways. You know, they could be a monopoly online, but they're just too disorganized. It's kind of the same way I feel about, you know, JFK conspiracy theories, you know. They assume that the government is competent enough to hide something like that. And I just don't think that's the case.
I totally agree. The short amount of time I spent in the military made me pretty much certain that the military isn't organizing any of these conspiracies. You know, maybe other people are. Maybe a bunch of terrorists with box cutters could pull something off. But man, you try and tell five ships to show up at the same place at the same time and just, you know... And it's like, it's all that they do. That's their job. So, yeah, I agree. I don't, most of the time, these big conspiracies are better in movies than real life. Oh, back to the thing, you know, of the live ID. I'm not going to go on and on about how much live ID drives me crazy, but you don't have to have a Hotmail account to have a live ID. I use my Gmail email as my live ID. Which I don't know if
I
that's right.
I use my Yahoo account.
Yep. It probably sets off some alarms somewhere, but...
Yeah, you can if you create it, or if you, you know, take the time to go in and change it. But, you know, it's... You could use your, you know, your fake porn star name if you wanted to for your live ID, and it wouldn't matter. It's still another ID that you have to remember, and, you know, the login page would look different. So sometimes you would enter in, you know, Muffin 36th Street or something. I don't remember how you calculate your fake porn name. You know, Muffin Maple Street or something on you know, live site, and sometimes it's Hotmail, sometimes it's, what is it, Windows Live ID. So maybe we'll have a Bing login page now.
If only there were, like, this identification system where you could share, like, it would be an open system, and you could use
it. It would have to be open, I would say.
An open system, right, and you'd be able to use it on multiple sites. It would just be an ID that would be open someday.
And
someday someone will come up with this.
Some major, you know, online presences supported it, like Google or Yahoo. If, you know, they said, you know, here, you know, you can also use your Google ID as your, you know, this in this open system, it would be great.
Now we're back to these weird conspiracy theories, so that'll never happen. Okay, the snarkiness alarms are going off. It's time to switch over to Wolfram Alpha. Who's tried Wolfram Alpha?
It's the Ask Jeeves of the 21st century. All we're doing is, you know, typing in filthy queries or strange nerdy queries and seeing what Wolfram says. But we're not actually using it for anything.
I had the same impression. I came up with a lot of silly things, like Saturn's escape velocity divided by the top speed of a cheetah. I like that one. Or one of my favorites was the GDP of Moldova divided by the box office take of Ernest Goes to Camp, which I believe is 186. But I think it was really hard to cut. And anything I wanted to come up with that was actually useful information, it was like one of those weird, like where you're playing one of those text-based computer games, you know, where you have to ask the question the right way. Like, you can't say, give the genie the key. You have to say, you know, like, take key to genie, you know, or to magic man, or, you know, it's like, so, like, I've had things where I've, like, struggled with the syntax on Wolfram Alpha, and then eventually I'll find something similar, have you guys seen that? Like, you can ask just about anything, but you have to learn how to phrase it correctly. Kevin, K. Scott, tried the Wolfram? Love, hate?
I've played around with it a little bit. You know, it seems like just one of those really targeted at academics, made for academics by academics kind of site. Like, I'm sure I would have loved it when I was in college. I just don't really have a use for the information that it contains in it, except probably 3-4 times a year. I'm sure, like, Wolfram Alpha will be like the awesome, this is the only place you can go to get this information kind of tool. But aside from that, it's cool. I think it's very cool. I think it's a valuable sort of adjunct to, you know, regular search engines, but it's not something I'm going to be using more than a few times a year, I suspect.
Anything that claims to be search or anything search related has to live up to Google, and it does have to be 200% better. It also has to pass the, you know, could I have also found this on Google? You know, so why switch? You know, I'm sure there's some more things you could do in Wolfram Alpha. And I don't know if we want a link in the show notes to who Stephen Wolfram is. Does anyone here not know who he is? I think we all pretty much know. Maybe, you know, an exercise to the listeners is to Bing Stephen Wolfram. And actually, maybe we should check with Wolfram Alpha and see who Stephen Wolfram is.
I think it's neat that you can ask it things like, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? And it'll actually tell you the answer. But in that sense, it's sort of the eclectic restaurant that you go to that the food's not great, but the atmosphere is kind of funky. So you might take a date there once in a while, but it's not going to be the place that you go to actually nourish yourself all the time.
Well, so what's even bizarre about that is that I've asked some philosophical questions and gotten different answers on different days. So how many angels can fit on the head of a pin? You know, one day it said 42, which of course is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. But then today it gave like some philosophical answers about how angels are metaphysical energy or something. So I typed in, who is Stephen Wolfram, into Wolfram Alpha. And what it gave me back was absolutely useless, unless there's something I'm missing here.
We're back to this. You have to ask the genie just the right way.
Well, I asked, who is Stephen Wolfram? It told me his full name, his date of birth, his place of birth, and it gave me a timeline. But it doesn't actually tell me anything about it, which is ironic because down there in the corner it says computed by Wolfram Mathematica. You know, that might be an interesting little tidbit to include in that. You know, hey, he created Mathematica. And there's, you know, but also showing exactly where I should be going to look for this under the related links is his Wikipedia page. So now, where am I going to search next time I have to look up a person? Wolfram Alpha has taught me to go to Wikipedia instead of Wolfram Alpha.
Two interesting things about that. One is I just did the Google versus Bing on Stephen Wolfram. And on Bing, it puts Wikipedia first and then gives his website second. And on Google, you get the website first and then Wikipedia second. And there's, I mean, philosophically, you could debate back and forth, but I think probably I would trust Wikipedia as a relevant search result. But I don't know. If I'm putting in an exact guy's name, maybe I want his website. But the other thing I've been thinking about this, the one person that I saw post a Wolfram Alpha search that was actually insightful is somebody we've had on the show before, John Udell. And the second I saw Wolfram Alpha, I'm like, this tool was designed for John Udell because he thinks in that kind of way, and it's a researchy tool. So he did a query on H1N1 Mexico deaths divided by H1N1 Mexico cases. And then he divided that by U.S. deaths divided by U.S. cases. So basically, what's the death rate of H1N1, you know, the swine flu, in Mexico versus the U.S.? And the result there, today it comes up with 11 times. So that means, you know, swine flu is 11.5 times more deadly in Mexico than the U.S. And probably because people don't go to the doctor or healthcare is, you know, not serving the people as well. I don't know exactly. Maybe not as prepared to deal with swine flu. But, I mean, that's actually some useful information. But I guess the thing I'm thinking with that is it takes knowing how to ask the question. It takes knowing how to research and what kind of questions to ask and how to ask them. Like, even just saying, we can post this question in the show notes. This is something where, like, it totally makes sense when you see it, but it's a ratio divided by a ratio to get some useful information.
I always think, I've thought that calling Alpha a search engine is really a misnomer. I mean, I think that the stupid tech press kind of jumped on that as like, ooh, could it kill Google? But, you know, they describe it as computational knowledge engine, you know, in their little tagline, and that makes a lot more sense to me. You know, it's a computation engine that's got a whole bunch of curated data behind it. It's not a search engine, and it's to even compare the two is really kind of silly. You know, it is one thing about Alpha is that it is, you know, it represents this body of knowledge, and Google doesn't. I mean, Google represents pointers to websites which may or may not contain useful information. So for a certain class of information, like for example, I just, you know, I'm in the middle of or at the end of refinancing my mortgage. So one of the things you go through if you're refinancing your mortgage is do the whole, you know, mortgage calculator. If I do that in Google, I get 50 million hits, some of which have, you know, good information and some of which don't, most of which are loan calculators where they're really trying to sell you a mortgage, and, you know, they've just have provided this little mortgage calculator in their sales page. But if I do that in Alpha, you enter in the loan information and it gives you a nice chart and the principal versus interest and then what the monthly payments are going to be. Boom. Like, it's there. They're not trying to sell you anything. So, you know, there is that use case of really you want that bit of knowledge. You're not trying to find the web page that might or might not contain that knowledge.
Yep. I see some similarities here. I was just thinking of it. I see some similarities a little bit to Stack Overflow. It's very like targeted information to solve a problem, a specific problem, versus I want to just get a lot of random information based on some keywords. I have to say one other just random Easter egg. I think my favorite Easter egg on Wolfram Alpha is how to cook a Welshman. And the answer is yes. And and if you look at the parsing information, it says squirrel fish equals squirrel fish. And somebody actually, in a comment on Reddit, people went through and analyzed how Welshman is a synonym for squirrel fish, as is cook or something, a cook fish. It was something where it was like, it really took some intelligence to figure out what the heck it was thinking. But that's got to be my favorite Easter egg by far. Are we done with the search part?
I was going to say, I think it would be good if Bing actually did make a noticeable dent in Google's market share, just because competition is always good. I've never been entirely comfortable with Google dominating the search engine market share. Just, you know, for the same reasons that it wasn't good when Microsoft dominated the browser market. Nothing happened for years.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. And not only that, because of Google's dominance, like if you don't appear in Google, if Google decides for some reason to remove you from their index, like they can crush you. They will put you out of business. And that is too much power for one company to have.
Absolutely.
That's something Jeff Atwood's blogged about several times when he talks about Google monoculture and how it's like basically they own the internet. Not necessarily that it's Google is good or bad, but just that it's bad to have a monoculture like that. And how, like you guys are saying, I mean, with browsers, definitely things stagnated with IE. Also, in a lot of ways, you could say just about anything good in Windows 7 is probably a result of, you know, OS X and, you know, potentially, how do you say it? Ubuntu? Or, you know, whatever else is going on in Linux, you know, in the Linux world. I don't know. I mean, Ubuntu? There's probably an online
pronunciation. Ubuntu. Hanselman went off on a rage about that.
Ask Bing. How do I pronounce Ubuntu?
Or ask Alpha.
Ask Alpha. You know, here's a semi-ridiculous
ask
thought.
Ask the Wolfram.
What if Bing, like we were talking earlier, Scott Kuhn pointed out that searching on coding questions gave kind of worse answers on Bing, but you know, really neither of them gives good answers. What if Bing pulled in Stack Overflow and then maybe some other competing sites actually pulled that information in an interesting way? And then to take it even further, what if Bing or Google pulled in, you know, integrated with Wolfram Alpha results a bit? I don't know if what the terms of service are or anything, but that would be interesting. You know, you get that little kind of, were you asking about, like, if I type in mortgage on Wolfram Alpha, I get awesome results. If I type it in, like you were saying, Kevin, on any other search engine, you get a bunch of things trying to sell you stuff, or like mortgage calculators written in 98. So I don't know. That could be interesting if there was a way to pull that information in.
You're describing a cloud-like mesh of search engine results.
Oh, man.
Search engine results.
Yes.
I actually think that, you know, Stack Overflow and Wolfram Alpha are a perfect example of what one way that Microsoft could attack the search space is to come up with these, you know, hyper-vertical sort of specialty search engines instead of trying to solve the general problem which Google seems to have solved, or at least dominated so far. You know, they're trying to do the frontal assault, which is kind of Microsoft's way. It's like, keep trying until you succeed, and they're just failing miserably at it. So I think they need to try to do some flanking maneuvers here and come up with some specialty sort of boutique-y kinds of search stuff, or community building, or, yeah, I don't know, stuff like that.
Well, so one of the things that would be required for anyone to pull in any results from anything else would be some kind of an API. And currently, Stack Overflow doesn't have any kind of an API. The only way you could get results in would be screen scraping, and you know that's not going to work very well.
That's not totally true. There are RSS feeds, and specifically for search results, you can get an RSS feed. I agree it's not a good API, but there is. You can do a search and then get an RSS feed for just about anything.
Yeah, but you know, can you do that programmatically? Can you hack the URL, I guess, and for a search? So could you concatenate or construct a Stack Overflow URL containing your search query from, you know, Bing.com or, you know, or some other, you know, say Expert Sexchange wants to start bringing in Stack Overflow results.
Right.
You know, could they just hack together a URL that would get them an RSS feed, and then they could present that at the very bottom of their ginormous page that hides all the answers? Probably not. And even if they could, you know, the Stack Overflow would probably, you know, catch on to that pretty quick. So Google has an API to their search engine, sort of, in that you can perform, you know, searches against it, use all their full, you know, range of keywords and operators and things like that with it. But maybe that is that's kind of got me thinking that maybe that's the next thing. Rather than having a single point of search, you end up with these kind of search aggregators. I remember Chris Perillo had done something like this a while back. I can't remember what the name of it is. Where, yeah, you basically, you type in a search phrase and it says, okay, well, you search on, you know, here are the best results for that from Flickr. Here are the best results from YouTube. Here are the best results from Yahoo and Live and Google and anything else. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe we start to harness. And maybe that's where the kind of vertical niche search comes in. So maybe you have a geeksearch.com that goes through and searches, you know, geek websites, Engadget, Geekology, Stack Overflow. Maybe that's, you know, Progit and all the other ones, and kind of collates all the responses, or maybe runs their own algorithm against the results and says, okay, here's the best top result that happens to be from Google. Here's the second result happens to be from Stack Overflow, et cetera, and goes on from there.
And obviously they'd have to kick something down to those sites to, you know, pay, you know, make it worth their while, right? They'd have to kick down some of their search dollars.
There would be much back scratching and reaching around to these sites, yes.
You know, so initially I agreed with you, but what if you pulled the question and, you know, just linked to a few, like say for instance I search on Model Binder and I get up at the top, you know, three quick questions on Stack Overflow. Well, that didn't solve my question. That just gives me some links, you know, and now I need to click through on those. And so actually that's potentially increasing the traffic to Stack Overflow. It's answering my question better. You know, Bing or Google get to show an ad, and, you know, Stack Overflow gets to show an ad. So I don't think necessarily that there's got to be a bunch of payoffs and backroom deals to get this stuff going. I think, you know, you can...
So the top results would always be ads.
Well...
Paid results.
Yeah.
Sponsored
links.
You know, one other thing when you were saying about the whole idea of federated search is that there is an open API for that, and that is one of the cool kind of unknown features in Windows 7 is that the search system supports federated search. So like you can search Flickr, or, you know, like in the same way that like I can say search for, you know, music, and it'll search not just my computer, but it'll search, you know, my wife's computer, and it'll search everything on our network. But then also you can say when I search photos, search for Flickr as well, or that kind of thing. And it actually works pretty well. It's partly, like, it's going to depend on how many people actually implement these federated search providers and all that kind of stuff. But it is a cool model. And that's built into the Windows 7
that
Explorer.
Sort of the role of the search providers in Internet Explorer?
Sort of, but yeah, exactly. It's the search provider in IE or Firefox, or, you know, but I thought it was interesting to see it actually brought into the Explorer itself too. So I don't know how useful that is necessarily if I want to see federated search results that amalgamate my photos with Flickr's, but I could.
I don't know. I think something like Meph could sort all of this out.
Yes. If only Meph ran on JavaScript.
You don't need Meph for JavaScript with JavaScript.
What about Project Nasal?
Yes. Well, should we do Google Wave and Nasal and anything else for do the a lightning round out of that? Come on, let's do lightning round out
should
of that.
Awesome. Lightning.
Twitter on the yeah. Xbox.
Great.
Which I think is a bad idea.
Okay,
right,
wait.
So
now,
who thinks Twitter on the Xbox is a good idea? Oh, John's taking control.
I'm sorry. I didn't have a clear place to edit in. Are we? So go ahead. Ask your. Well, we have no transition. Also, that's an issue.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about the lightning round. It just strikes.
Okay, the lightning round is striking.
Who thinks Twitter on the Xbox is a good idea, John?
Silly, but maybe for people, maybe somebody will use it. I don't know.
Scott K?
I don't know. It's not the dumbest thing on Xbox, I don't think.
Kevin?
I guess I don't really have an opinion. I certainly don't want people that I follow's tweets coming up, like telling me what game they're playing right now or what their current score is. That would be irritating. But I don't know how they're really going to integrate it.
You wouldn't want to see something like you wouldn't want to see like their Spymaster update.
Right, exactly. Or what song they're listening to right now, or that would
get an
unfollow
from me. What is the last FM support that they added? John, do you know?
I think Last FM support should be everywhere. Everything should support Last FM.
Agree.
I should be able to bring up Last FM on my electric toothbrush and have it play, you know, it tag brushing my teeth songs.
Yes. Well, I was disappointed that Zune built their own social instead of supporting Last FM, which already does all that stuff and does it better. Or at least it would have been nice if Zune had like events and things like Windows Media Player and iTunes do, where you could integrate with Last FM, and they don't. So it's interesting now it's on Xbox, and you know maybe that means it'll get to Zune. I still see some kind of convergence of Zune and Xbox at some point. I mean, there's now you can play XNA games on Zune. You know, you can listen to music on your Xbox. I think I see the two of them kind of coming together at some point.
Sure. Do you use Last FM, Kevin?
No, I don't. I have no informed opinion.
I find myself using my iPod less and less and going to Last FM because they've suddenly gotten better about the number of and the quality of artists that they have on there. So if I type in Miles Davis and the artist now on Last FM, I actually get other jazz artists, and in some cases they're even trumpeters, or at least, you know, artists that were around when Miles Davis was around. I don't get the latest emo indie band song because they said they were once inspired by a Miles Davis tune. So that's nice. Okay, so moving on.
All right, so just some of these announcements were from E3, right? So Microsoft announced a number of things for the Xbox that were coming up, a couple games and so forth. But Project Nasal made a big splash because this is playing the Xbox without a controller. So it's sort of it's trying to jump past where the Wii is, where you have a controller and you can stand up, and you can do bowling and play tennis and wave your arms around. This is actually standing in front of the Xbox and, you know, kicking at your TV to drop kick somebody. Anyone think this is going to work? Is this going to be cool?
I think the demos that they had were so incredibly scripted that they could have been a reality TV show. And everyone is going on and on about the Milo demo that Peter Molyneux did. Oh my Lord. there's just no way. I don't think that you're going to reach that kind of interactivity. Yeah. I don't believe it for a second. I think that level of interactivity is still years away. And it's certainly not coming out of a creaky old Xbox. maybe Wolfram Alpha. They kind of had these, they had these things on the PS2 for a while, didn't they? The iToy, where you could jump around and hold balls and things like that on the screen, supposedly.
You know, I've played with the... You get those free programs that come with your webcam sometimes, and I've played with them and gotten disgusted and stopped using them. The one thing that I think is interesting here is that one of the guys on this project is Johnny Chung Lee, who... He was behind the Wiimote project, which basically they did all kinds of crazy stuff using a Wii remote and turned it around. So instead of pointing the Wii remote at the screen, they would point the Wii remote at you, and then you would hold some kind of, you know, like you would wear reflective gloves or you'd move a light pen around or whatever. And they did incredible stuff with four really simple sensors and a, you know, $30, $40 remote. And so that kind of gives me a little hope that there may be something behind this. I've also read some reviews where people said, no, this is actually for real. Like, you know, I agree that the demos that you see in that demo video, it says at the beginning, it's like, this is, you know, what we may do. This is just an idea. And then it plays like something off of, you know, NCIS or 24 or something. So I agree that looks silly. But they do actually have... They people say they have actual working games that are using this, which sounds really cool.
It would be pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely skeptical on the Project Neonatal. It definitely seems too good to be true, and so I'm withholding judgment obviously until I actually see it, and you know maybe I'll be proved wrong, but you know they had so much stuff in it. It was like multiple joint tracking, you know, face recognition, voice recognition. I mean, it was all like, you'd think they'd be selling this stuff to the military and not putting it in video game system. So it was like too much for me to really believe. And it's the kind of thing where if they get it just a little bit wrong, it's going to be so intensely frustrating that people will not use it at all. Like people have a very short frustration point with these kinds of things. So unless they completely nail it, you know, it'll be kind of an interesting thing that doesn't gain any traction until maybe, you know, version 3 when they finally iron out the kinks. But, you know, people are very persnickety about their game controllers. And, like, if there's any sort of, like, missense thing of your body position that causes you to lose the game, then people are just not going to have it. And they had some really goofy demos. Like there was that painting demo where they were like throwing paint on the canvas. Like, what the hell was that? I didn't get that. Why that would be even remotely interesting.
I did read one review where the guy was saying basically like, I'm a hardcore gamer. Yes, I tried this. Yes, it worked. No, I wouldn't actually like to use it because I'm a hardcore gamer. I'm used to the controllers and I know what to do with them. But this seems like it would be cool for... maybe a little bit more of the Wii type scenario or even more casual, like family game night, you know, like kind of thing. So I agree. I think Halo on one of these things might be totally annoying, but you know, maybe, you know, get the kids to pop a bunch of balloons or something might work.
Some people had pointed out, I think Adam Kinney or somebody had mentioned, you know, something like Air Guitar Hero might work well. Dance Dance Revolution might work. I don't know exactly how you check, you know, if it just be style points or if it could actually tell where you were stepping.
I like that.
Viva Pinata. Fun for the whole family. Swing a stick around blindfolded in your house and
in the tail of the donkey.
The one demo I saw was someone driving a race car, which I thought would be totally stupid for that sort of technology. You really need some sort of tactile feedback.
Nothing says fun like holding your arm straight out in front of you for, you know, 30 minutes at a time.
Doing like a yoga instructional video where it's like, you know, no, your arm needs to be a little higher, you know, if it can actually set your joint positions.
And it looks like Adobe is trying to get in on a super preview. They announced some tool that will render a site design in a different browser, and it's web-hosted. Anyone heard of this?
No. What's it called? Is there a name?
Stunned Silence. used to be called Mirror Mirror. But you know what I call it? A ripoff of Super Preview. And they say it's going to be available for free initially. Oh, yeah, Windows 7. Maybe. Who's excited about Windows 7 being released in October?
Me.
I'm super excited.
I don't know why it's that long.
Well, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I know I'm not at all the right use case for this, and I like alpha software and all that, but Windows 7 has been more stable than Vista for me for a long time. The release candidate, like, my understanding is that they're not really changing much from release candidate to RTM. So I don't know exactly if it's just this is how it's done. It's an operating system, and it's, you know, things are shipped out slowly. But it's October seems a ways out to me.
They've got to go through the OEM testing process and, you know, make sure that it installs correctly in all the Dell and HP and Gateway machines and runs fine. And they got to have time to integrate their crapware with Windows 7. And, you know, everything else. And well, they actually have to get installed and blasted and loaded. And
I can't even imagine, like, the amount of just machinery that's set in motion with release of Windows. Like, even beyond the software, you know, like, all the boxing.
Someone has to get the Rolling Stones to record, like, a new opening music thing.
All the IT shops have to, like, go over to their calendar and mark wait for SP1 on it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of work.
We can actually see the glow in Redmond from across Lake Washington and Seattle when they start a new release. You know, they burn all the CDs over there in their DVD foundry with the Bingaloopas that pound out the CDs, hand forge each CD in their
Everybody has workshops. To put on their special laser protection glasses while they...
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
and every time they press a new one, the lights dim in the Washington area, the Puget Sound area.
It's the beginning of this long, long, like, cycle, because, like, okay, so it goes RTM in October, and then people start buying new computers, and then, you know, I mean, how long until it's actually, like, out there is you know, and like, I was talking to my brother-in-law who's in IT, and he was using XP on his laptop, and I was like, oh, you're using Windows Nostalgia Edition, that's awesome, you know, and he's like, well, you know, and then, you know, I was like, well, what about Windows 7? And he's like, oh, you know, don't we normally wait for SP1? And I'm like, well, you're on XP, they've got how many service packs of Vista out? And he's like, well, you know, everybody skip Vista. And I'm just like, come on. So I think that there's an unlimited amount of excuses out there for not upgrading, but I don't know. It's just, to me, it's like, I'm like, I want to see Windows 7. I like it, and I want to see it out there soon.
Are you guys all running it?
Yeah.
I have it on a virtual PC, been trying it out, but I haven't tried it on real hardware yet.
I've got it on real hardware, but that machine, I think, is having some other issues, so...
I've got it on two machines. I've got it on a laptop, I've got it on an IBM ThinkPad, and I've got it on our family's media center computer, which is good in testing out, you know, like how like if that crashes, nobody's happy. And so actually it's been really cool. It's worked well on the media center. There's a lot of like little media enhancements and stuff. So I've been very happy with it out there.
Yeah, I just recently set up a new machine at work, and so I burned it down and rebuilt it, decided to do it on Windows 7 RC. It's my main work machine. And yeah, it's been great. It's been great. I've had absolutely no problems with it.
Has anyone been doing boot from VHD? Have you tried that?
I have not.
No, I want to.
I do too, because that'll be awesome.
I've got a VHD of Windows 7 RC sitting there with Visual Studio 2010 installed, and I want to see if I can just, you know, add that to my boot menu, attach it and add it, and just boot up to it, but I don't know. That's such a developer feature. I don't know how, what, unless they really wrap it in some nifty wizards, I don't know what average or, you know, what business user is really going to use that or set it up.
Oh, it's an enterprise feature. It's so IT departments can deploy standard images really, really easily. I mean, that's my take on it.
But they can do that now with, like, Norton Ghost or anything else.
Yeah, they have a whole servicing imaging feature. It's a DISM. I don't even know what it stands for. I started reading about that when I was complaining that they didn't have ISO mounting. And I found out there's this whole, like, of course, there's WIM, Windows something, and then there's DISM, D-I-S-M, and both of them are, like, some sort of, you know, enterprise-y features for blasting out images that can be mounted and stuff. But I guess VHD is nicer because it's a, you know, virtual machine technology. But I think I tried to mess with it, and it needs hardware support and some other things, and I couldn't do it on the machine I was using.
Which one you couldn't use?
VHD. Doesn't boot from VHD take hardware support?
No. It's running the Windows XP in a whatever you call it mode.
XP mode requires VT support.
Yeah. Which sucks.
Huh. I'll have to give it another look.
Interesting. What about this Google Wave thing that Google announced? It's called Google Wave.
I'm very excited that I'll be able to use Google Wave to communicate with my Google Orkut connections. Oh, wait. So the Google keeps coming out with these things. I mean, they come out with something that's like extremely useful, like Gmail or Google Reader. And they come out with stuff that is like Orkut, where, you know, there's, you know, 30,000 Google employees and you if you sign up for it. And that's it. And no one else is going to be using that. And I kind of see Wave as the same thing. I don't, you know, I can't get my wife on Gmail. No one I know is using Google Talk except kind of incidentally. Occasionally I'll chat with someone inside of Gmail, you know, using their chat feature. But I'm sure that it's used constantly inside of Google. And I don't know. That Wave kind of strikes me as that way. I don't think I'm going to be able to do a lot of dragging of my Picasa pictures into Wave so that I can send it out to all my Orkut connections. And that, you know, it has an API, but that means that, you know, so Windows Live Spaces, or are they Bing Spaces now? MySpace, Facebook will all have to write their own providers for Wave, unless Google goes through and puts out their little sample Facebook integration app. I don't know. I think I'll sign up and, you know, I'll be able to send one other person a Wave, and that the content of that Wave will be, cool, we're using Google Wave. And, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even sure what to ask then. It seems like there's been a bunch of these collaboration tools that come out, and they just, I don't know, they're just collaboration tools to get excited about and then not really use.
Yeah, they always say, you know, look, your wife can send you the shopping list. Oh, no, you know what happens? My wife calls me up and says, hey, pick this up, dummy. She doesn't, you know, send me a Wave, or she doesn't IM me. Sometimes she'll send me an email, and that's about as technological as we get. And I think we're pretty representative of people out there.
Right.
I think one thing that's neat about Wave is just that it shows that you can do, like, it was kind of a demo of what's in HTML5. It just in that, you know, it shows off the video tag. It shows off a lot of things that are in HTML5. That people just assume you need Flash or Silverlight or whatever for. So I think that may be one of the best things that comes out of Wave. I think that Jeff Atwood put a thing on Twitter saying it was the most Microsofty thing he's seen out of Google in a while, and Mary Jo Foley ended up quoting it for an article, which was awesome. But I do think that it did come across that way, where it was like, here's a grand new vision, we're going to take email and we're going to kick it up a notch, and we're going to solve, and they like solved so many things and did so much all at once, you know, as opposed to just like a more incremental approach, you know.
They completely picked the wrong name.
Yes.
They should have called it Google Groove.
Yes.
So speaking of collaboration, what's up with Mesh? Is it just folder share do?
Well, it does have that remote desktop feature that's aggravatingly slow.
That is kind of cool. And it works if you can put it into full screen mode, but it's not smart enough to do a monitor setup down to a single monitor. So if you remote into a dual monitor box and you only have a single monitor, you have to scroll around a lot.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that. That would be annoying. Kevin? Wave?
I kind of agree with Scott. Like, it just seems... It's hard to tell a little bit because I've only seen that one video and, you know, I haven't played with it, but it definitely seems like Google going off, a couple of Google engineers going off and like trying to reinvent the world. I mean, as soon as they said, like, I was watching the video and they're like, and a wave is a tree structure and you can apply permissions across, you know, subsets of the tree. I was like, okay, this is some engineers, you know, geeking out in a way that normal people are not going to get, and probably most engineers aren't going to get either. So I'm very skeptical. But, you know, I haven't actually played with it, so it's really hard to make any sort of informed commentary. But I'll make it uninformed commentary anyways. But I agree with John that, like, the very cool that they're essentially driving the browser really, really hard. And you can see where, you know, they're going to be driving WebKit hard, and Chrome is going to be getting better all to support this stuff. So from that perspective, you know, as long as you don't need to use IE, which nobody should be using anymore anyways, then your life will improve. Your browser, your web experience will improve because Google is pushing this stuff so hard. So
there were two things that I found technically interesting about Wave. The first thing is that it's a very complicated app, and it's built using the Google Web Toolkit. Not a lot of the Google properties are actually built using GWT. They're all like Gmail and GReader, I think, are all hand-rolled JavaScript with the, I want to say a C backend, but it could be Java, depending. I don't remember for sure. And the second thing was that it kind of turned into some people were comparing Wave directly to Silverlight, you know, the kind of the tech pundits. But it's really not Wave versus Silverlight, because they're two separate, you know, completely different things. But it's really HTML5 plus Canvas versus Silverlight. And Google was kind of showing, you know, here's what you'll be able to do. Here's the kind of, you know, rich media apps you'll be able to build using HTML5 and Canvas. And this will eventually be shipped, you know, in every browser, except IE.com. Who's still dragging their heels on supporting Canvas, the Canvas tag. And we will anxiously await the SVG comment from John after I finish talking. But so a lot of the stuff that they were demoing, like the videos at YouTube using the HTML5 video tag, were really, you know, the first kind of actual shot across the bow of against Silverlight and Flash both. They're saying, yeah, you know, you can either buy into either one of these vendors' tool sets, or you can just keep on, you know, extend your existing Ajax apps using the browser, HTML5 and JavaScript, or maybe using, you know, Google Web Toolkit or something else to extend it.
I mean, yeah, I guess if I'm called out on talking about SVG, the one thing I would point out is I do see Canvas popping up everywhere. I do see it on, you know, like they're using it for Bespin in Firefox. It's all over the place. SVG seems to me more like Silverlight in that it's retained graphics. So you can say, you know, I would like a rectangle here. I'd like a circle here. I'd like this text here. And you count on the engine to handle that, you know, whereas with Canvas, it's more of a bitmap approach. And so you're responsible for drawing the screen and handling redraws and all that kind of stuff. It does seem weird. I'm not sure what all is going on behind the scenes on that. I understand that in a way it competes with XAML, and so maybe that's part of why Microsoft's not into it. And they've got VML, which is a whole other debacle. But I do think it is weird that you don't see more SVG from Google, you know, WebKit, everybody else, and everyone's jumping into the Canvas. Maybe it's easier to write for, I'm not sure, but that seems odd. SVG out! Is the lightning round over?
Yeah, I think it's fizzled out.
All right, I'm going to kill it there. That's it for this week on Herding Code. Right. Goodbye.
Oh, that was abrupt.
Yeah, did you like it?
You have somewhere to go, John?
No, I was just...
The Windows 7 release date was announced, right? Who's excited about that? Anyone?
Hey, I didn't get the chance, my chance to say... Put in my
oh,
two cents.
Oh, Kevin.
I didn't get my lightning round, damn it.
Sorry, Kevin. I thought since you punted on the last FM question that you were out of the lightning round.
Oh, is that how the lightning round works? It's not clear to me.